Hey there, welcome to Blockhead, the Peanuts tribute podcast from a cartoonist's point of view. My name is Jeff Grogan, and I will be your host for the next few minutes to talk about Peanuts, Charles Schulz, and all things Charlie Brown, Linus, Lucy, and Snoopy too. So sit back and enjoy. Welcome back to Blockhead. Today's episode, the second part of our two-part interview with Will Henry, the cartoonist of Wallace the Brave, that newly syndicated comic strip that should be gracing the pages of your local newspaper right now. If it's not, give him a call, write him a letter, let him know you'd like to see Wallace the Brave. It's sure to liven up your comics page. Will and I have a really interesting and fun discussion about Wallace and Charles Schulz, Peanuts, Woodstock, Snoopy, and the influence thereof on Will's work and his development and his approach to cartooning and his thoughts about being a cartoonist. So let's just get right to it, okay? Without further ado, myself and Will Henry in discussion. It's funny. I think trying to break in now has become so difficult that a lot of people look for outlets otherwise, you know, in other ways. And also the emphasis on humor. It just seems like it wasn't a career path that was clearly mapped out for you when we were kids. So it's not like it was in the day when Schulz was so determined. And there was a big magazine market then too. So if you didn't do the comic strip world, you could always go downtown in New York and hang out at wherever it was they used to hang out to get assignments from the New Yorker. But there was that world too, which there isn't so much anymore.
No, there isn't. And you know, it's kind of a shame. And you know, when you mention that, it's funny how newspapers are kind of discounting the comics page when you know, I got to imagine some of the most popular stuff, comics and sports, right? I mean,
yeah,
I find it weird that they're not really giving it the attention that it deserves.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times newspapers just, well, the old trope is that newspaper editors hate the comics page. That even though, you know, sports and comics sell the newspaper, and if you try to take a comic out of the newspaper, you get thousands of letters. Newspaper editors have always had that thing against comics. Now I'm going to get 1,000 complaints from newspaper editers saying, hey,
comics. Those guys are stretched thin. I mean, they got a lot on their plates these days.
They do, and they don't want to give up space, and I can completely understand why that is. But hey, you know, cartoonists sell the newspapers, so give us more space and make them bigger. But boy, once they got the opportunity to start shrinking them, they just went, you know, whole hog, right? They eliminated pages and made them squinchy and small. And have you seen your stuff pulled and stretched yet? Because that's kind of scary.
Oh yeah, in the newspaper. Weird to see.
It is really, it's just, I would go, I would freak out. I mean,
it's really weird. I get it. You got to do it. I guess, I don't know. It's just,
You wake up on a Sunday and you pick up the newspaper and you look at your Sunday comic and it's been like squinched, you know, to fit in between, you know, Garfield and something else. Sometimes, you know, as artists, I think we always know. The general audience may not know, but it's something that we're sensitive to. So when I've seen your strip kind of mushed around a little bit, I know it, you know, because I know what your style looks like. And the same is true of Peanuts or other things. You would think with they would, but no. All right. Well, I'm giving them too much credit. So when you think about character development and you think about how characters change and how Peanuts characters have changed over the years, do you imagine, or maybe even now that you're working a little farther ahead, are you seeing those kinds of changes in your own characters? Are they growing and pushing themselves in different directions the way that Charlie Brown might have or Lucy might have when Schulz was working with them?
Sure. I mean, I see the development almost daily, and especially following Peanuts, it gets me excited because I think, hell, maybe some of my better ideas haven't even like popped out yet. You know, maybe in like 5 years, I'll come up with an aha moment. You know, the way that Schultz did.
Yeah.
Comparing myself to Schultz, just like having, you know, sometimes new things are for the better, you know, and I don't even know what they might be.
It's wonderful to look at Schultz and see how he did change, and his audience seemed to grow and go along with him as he did change. They seemed to be very accepting of all of the new characters that were introduced over the years, all of the differences in the characters over the years. That was something that, like, a Snoopy morphed from a little puppy dog in those first strips to sleeping
on the Red Baron, you know?
And then the Red Baron, and then beyond that, the audience just went with it, and I hope your audience goes along with it with you too as things change. You know, I mean, we look at this, a lot of strips now, Garfield has been around since the 80s, and Garfield, you could read Garfield today. Well, okay, there's a question. Is there pressure on you from either the syndicate or the newspapers to stay the same? Is that something that you hear? Because, like I said, Garfield is still Garfield, and Calvin and Hobbes, even over the course of 10 years, was pretty much Calvin and Hobbes. So is that something that you've encountered, or they seem pretty flexible?
You know, I don't think it's made enough presence for them to make those kind of comments, or they haven't said anything like that. You know, they've been actually very, you know, liberal with what I do. You know, they haven't really said much. There's a couple things when we're getting ready for launch that they mentioned that, you know, we hashed out, but they weren't very big. They've been very, they give me a lot of freedom with the strip, which is cool. Whether, you know, if it just by happenstance gets, you know, a huge following, then, you know, maybe they'll have something to say, but I haven't gotten there yet.
It's good to not feel that kind of pressure and feel instead that you're working with a good partner. Do you see the day when Wallace might be animated by Bill Melendez in his studio? Well, Bill Melendez has passed away, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You see
a
Wallace Christmas special out there in the future?
People ask me that all the time, and it's funny. I haven't really given much thought to it.
I could see it.
I always said this, though. If there was a Wallace the Brave Christmas special, it'd be nothing but, like, reggae Christmas songs. That's all I want, you know?
That's great. That would be true. Nice little
very mellow vibes.
Yeah, I like that, though. Okay, now you're going to have to do it. Wait for the reggae Christmas tunes.
The focus has been just getting the strip out and trying to be a good dad. That's kind of like where I'm at right now.
So what kind of days do you have working on the strip? Schultz would go to the studio 9 to 4. And is that what you're doing? Or is it getting up early with your son? Or how's it
it's,
Will Henry?
It's a little sporadic now. So the normal is usually like, 3 days of inking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2 days of coloring and watching my son Will. But this month has been really weird because, you know, my wife, actually, she's a baker, and we just bought a bakery. So we're trying to, like, rehab this bakery and move in.
Oh, man, you've got a job.
Yeah, dude.
You a handyman?
I'm pretty handy. I can swing a hammer.
You were a sculptor, so, yeah.
I know the tools.
Right, I guess you do.
Yeah, well, I hope it works out. I know it's going to work out. She's very driven and very talented. But it's been a lot of me and Will during the day. Mm-hmm. And then when she comes home from trying to get this bakery up and running, you know, I'll do my comics at night. And it's not too bad. It's fun.
You know, another thing that strikes me in Wallace the Brave is the landscape and the world of Snug Harbor. The coloring of Wallace is very distinct. And is that something you're doing yourself, or is that something they're doing for you? I mean, I get the feeling it's kind of personal.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I've had other artists tell me that they hate coloring. I love coloring. It's like one of my favorite things to do. You know, I'll sit down, I'll put on Braveheart, I'll smoke a little J, and then just jump into coloring, and I'll sit there for hours. And
you coloring Photoshop, or are you doing it hand?
I do a Photoshop. I mean, I do it in Photoshop for print, but, you know, I probably color every other comic with watercolor just to keep sharp.
Wow, that's
maybe
nice.
Every other three.
Really? Wow. That's incredible. So are you coloring the originals themselves, or are you laying like a vellum sheet or something over, or acetate, or are you just coloring right into the original?
Coloring right on it.
Wow, man, those are going to be worth some money.
I don't know, man. My little boy got into them yesterday and just threw them all over the house. but I
take no a respect. Lot of... These kids,
no
they got
respect.
No respect. Yeah.
For the elders. But I take pride in my coloring. Anders McNeil gave me the option to, you know, have one of their staff members color it, and not saying they wouldn't do a fantastic job. I just, I don't think I would let anybody ever touch my comics. I don't know, you know, if my name's going to be on it, I'm not going to let somebody else color, you know, and if.
And that's distinct from, you know, again, from the era of Charles Schulz. And I think it's not only Schulz, but his contemporaries. While they might do a color guide for the printer for Sundays, you know, they weren't coloring the comics themselves because it wasn't part of the, it wasn't part of the job. It wasn't part of the gig, you know.
I'm trying to walk this line because, you know, from what I heard about Schulz, and I'm not an expert, I can't keep up with Brad Perry, I'll tell you that, but I've always understood that Charles Schulz kind of had this mentality of, you know, I'm supplying a product for your newspaper to sell newspapers, you know? And that's kind of... That's kind of my mentality. You know, I understand that it's a newspaper. I understand that I'm there to sell newspapers. And I understand that, you know, these are the sizes and colors and things I can work with. You know, I know a lot of comic artists kind of complain about the size of the newspaper page, but, you know, it's, you know what you're getting into. You know, I'm not saying I agree with it, but, you know, these are... the parameters. And I think, you know, Charles Schulz kind of instilled that on me a little bit, how, you know, that's the game, you know, we're creating content to sell newspapers. And, I don't know. I've always had it in the back of my mind.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know, that kind of, workman attitude, I think it was built in, and any good cartoonist who's going to be syndicated, who's going to be on that kind of strict schedule, has to have that kind of workmanlike attitude, but also that discipline that goes with it, because, hey man, you're 7 days a week, there's no breaks. And, you know, Schulz was different than somebody like Gary Trudeau, who comes and goes, takes a break. He's, you know, he takes 6 months off or a year or however long it was that, and now he's, I don't know, he's only doing Sundays. But Schulz was very much, if you're a cartoonist, this is the job. And the parameters of the job are like this: you work for the newspapers and you produce product 7 days a week, and you get it done. Very, you know, my dad had that same attitude about going to work. You know, it was like he felt lucky to have the job he had, and, you know, he went every day, 9 to 5, no bones about it, did whatever they asked him to do. That was, you know, it's that kind of, it's an attitude I understand, and you don't want to let them down, you know, because you feel like they're your audience and they're supporting you. They believe in you. They've given you space. I think Charles Schulz held on to that very much so, and it was a big part of his work ethic. At the same time, like you, he also didn't want to let anybody near his stuff. You know, like people would write in with ideas, or people he knew would suggest ideas all the time. And he'd say, thank you very much, but I've got to do this myself. I get, that's where you're coming from too.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah, I don't want anybody else to work on my comic except for me. Obviously my editor is instrumental in the development and, you know, keeping my bad ideas out. But, you know, back to like the newspaper thing, you know, I get why web comics do what they do. You know, they have complete freedom. They don't have to answer to anybody, you know? And that is an awesome way to create, but I work better with parameters. That's just me. You know, I find I work better with the parameters. And I think, you know, when people pick up a newspaper, they're expecting to see a certain kind of comic strip. And I think if you can take that and give them something unexpected, I think it can be just as effective as, you know, having all the freedom in the world, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I think sometimes when you take limitations, that can unleash creativity rather than repress creativity.
Yeah, you know? And that's how I work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's part of the whole thing about, you know, talking about the short form, which I love too. It's like Kurt Vonnegut chapters. I don't know if you've read Vonnegut.
Oh, but yeah.
I had that feeling you had. Anyway, I think I know a Vonnegut fan when I run into one. But the way he writes with those short little chapters, I dig that. I understand that. It's like, get in, say what you got to say, get out. You know, don't waste people's time. Well, I love that about comic strips too. You know, that incremental moment where one of the things I love about reading collections of comic strips is that you can, even if it's something as involved as Terry and the Pirates, you can pick it up and read it, and then you can put it down, and you can read it again and read like a couple of pages, put it down and go back to it again. And because the story grows in very well-defined increments every day. I love that about comics and short
films. Those adventure strips, you know, they, you can pick them up, but by the end of the strip, you're like, I want to know what's going to happen next, you know?
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm just jumping in, but I want to know.
Yeah. Do you have any adventure strips that you particularly love?
I was big into Dick Tracy. You know, when that movie came out in the 90s, I went back and read a lot of the comics.
Chester Gould.
Would you consider, like, Nemo in Slumberland an adventure?
Oh. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, you know, those books are stunning. Winsor McKay is just like a wow.
Yeah,
you know, those are amazing.
And there's even a Crazy Cat, you know, kind of adventure. I think it's like Tiger Tea or something like that I was really getting into, where it's more of a ongoing story as opposed to just like a one hitter.
Sure.
With the brick.
Right. I know. Ignat. So when you think about your favorite comic strips, newspaper comic strips now, not web comics, what comics do you think of? What's your top five?
Ooh.
I know.
No one's ever asked me that.
Well, you know, and maybe you don't think that way. I mean, some people do think that way. You know, they make lists and they categorize, and other people just kind of go with the flow. So, you know, all right. So I'm throwing it out there to you. What comes to mind?
I mean, off the top of my head, let's see. Crazy Cat, number one. That's the best, in my opinion.
I can see Crazy Cat in your stuff. I can see that, yeah.
I love all those crazy things he does in the backgrounds. I just find them so fascinating.
Yeah.
I like that. Peanuts. And this is in no particular order, all right?
Right. Yeah.
Peanuts, Crazy Cat. Oh, God. Garfield.
Really? Okay.
I love Garfield. I do.
Uh-huh.
Earlier Garfield.
I love what's that comic that they erase Garfield from all of the panels.
Garfield minus Garfield.
Yeah, I get into that one. That one's pretty
Calvin and Hobbes and Farside.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all of them are great. Calvin and Hobbes, you know, it's interesting that, like, in Wallace, there are these wonderful moments, these fantastical moments where the monsters are visualized, and you draw some great monsters, man. Some really terrific, wonderful monsters who, by the way, don't at all scare me. They're beautiful and inventive, and they remind me of, they remind me of Bill Watterson, but they also remind me of Maurice Sendak. I don't know if you look at any Sendak illustrations, like, you know, Where the Wild Things Are and all that kind of stuff.
They have like a unassuming dark grittiness to them that I really like.
Yeah. And that kind of comes across in your stuff too. I love those monsters and those moments in Wallace where Spud is imagining the worst, you know, or maybe those monsters are really there. I don't know.
We don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know. They're there. They might really be under the bed or under the sewer grate or whatever. But they're there. They're beautiful, though.
There's nothing better than, you know, sitting down and having like a penciled comic with some, you know, kind of elaborate illustrations going on and just like not having a deadline, you know, just being like, I have all the time in the world to work on this one. It's a really cool feeling because, you know, sometimes you don't have that time, you know?
Yeah. It's true, especially if, you know, over the years, if the deadlines get closer and closer and you don't have that big backlog of stuff. It's interesting thinking about it now. You know, we talked about kind of the generic quality of, but universal quality of Schultz's Suburbia, and how one of the things that happens in Schultz's work is how spare it becomes. And I think part of that has to do with the size that he was working at, has to do with the pace he was working at. But also, I think it's how he conceived the world. You know, the predominance of the characters was really important. But you know, that fantastical element comes out in Snoopy and in Snoopy's world, and is particularly visualized in the animated films. It's kind of nice in your work. You're not restricted. There's a spareness here and there, but it's not at all minimal, you know, in the way you can sometimes say Schultz's work is kind of minimal.
When I look at Schultz's work, I mean, there'll be a comic strip where, you know, there will be no details about where the characters are present, but it works.
Yeah,
it works. You know, I don't have the chops for that. You know, I have to put these guys in the living room or in the classroom. He had a fantastic gift for being minimal but specific, if that makes sense. You know, a fence post in the back, like, oh, they're outside by the dugout. You know, that's you all know you need.
I'm thinking about landscape in your work, because I do think you're two distinct cartoonists. You're both working with kid strips, but you're both distinct. But one place where I know it sounds silly, and maybe it's not a big deal, but one place where I really see the kind of connection between the two of you is, you know, your beautiful drawings of Snug Harbor and Schultz's wonderful birch trees. Does it sound silly, but you know, man, he draws the most beautiful birch trees,
especially up by the ice. I mean, I love those skating scenes with the birch trees in the background, the foreground. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, they're gorgeous, and there's just something about a Charles Schultz birch tree that just, you know, just hits me where I live. You know, I don't know what it is about that, but it is the same. I have to say the same thing is true about the rolling hills of Snug Harbor. I love the way you do that, the way the houses sit on those hills, the houses on stilts, all really beautiful. And it calls to mind, now that I think about it, I hadn't made the connection before, but it does call to mind that that quality in Schultz, that lyrical quality in his birch trees and in the kite-eating tree periodically.
You know what? This is a great podcast. I like this. thank you for saying that. It's very nice.
Well, you know, I think, Will, you're working at a very high level. You know, the strip has this undefinable quality, a universality about it in a lot of the ways that Peanuts has. And while you've said you've got issues and they'll come out eventually, at this point, the anger that was in Charles Schultz, you know, simmering below the surface, I don't get it from Wallace yet. Maybe some days you become a cranky old man, you know, which I hope doesn't happen to you. It might come up, but it doesn't have to be there. You know, what Wallace is different and distinct from what Schultz was mining. I mean, I think Schultz is mining a world of psychology, its own psychology that, first of all, I don't know anybody else in the comic space who does that. Even when I think about all of those people, all those great cartoonists who followed afterwards, yourself included, this is not to say you won't do it someday, but psychology was something that was particularly of interest in the era, you know, that Schultz was working. It made it distinct from maybe the 80s or the 90s, where, you know, that kind of inward looking stuff, that anxiety that cartoonists like Jules Pfeiffer were mining, that stuff wasn't as prevalent among cartoonists in the 80s and 90s or even afterwards. You know, when I think of like the something like Calvin and Hobbes, which is one of the greatest strips, you know, certainly in the pantheon of great strips, you know, that's not even Calvin's a character, that's for sure. Psychology, I don't know if psychology is what Watterson is so much interested in. I think it's something unique to Schultz and maybe that period that he was working, that post-World War II angst.
I think so too. And I think it has, you know, I think it has to do with that I mean, I'm not a psychologist, I don't know, but, you know, I think it has to do with that like post-war angst. I think everybody is on edge and thinking about the world around them.
Yeah.
And I even get a lot of that from Gary Trudeau's work during the Vietnam War. I mean, read those early strips and you get, I mean, it's not as, it's great. It's not as elegant as Peanuts, but it definitely has a lot of that, you know, inward looking and outward looking too, maybe more outward than Snoopy and Charlie Brown.
Well, you know, Trudeau's world was, Trudeau's interested in satire and politics and the world outside in a way that Schultz kind of internalized that stuff. Politics weren't his thing. But Trudeau, yeah. Wow, I can't, you know, as soon as you said Trudeau and you said early Trudeau, I see the line and I'm looking at, I can see, you know, BD and Mike Doonesbury in those early strips, and I can see that line, and I can see that line in Will Henry's work. That's really interesting. I hadn't made that connection until you said it. So is early Doonesbury, obviously you've read those strips. Is that one of your things too, Doonesbury?
Yeah, and I mean, it's, I mean, talk about another illustrious career.
Yeah.
But what speaks to me is the earlier stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's, I think it's fantastic. I think it's edgy.
Yeah. Me too, man. There's this one strip where Zonker is getting stoned in the huddle when he's playing on the college football team with BD, and BD's giving him, you know, shit about getting stoned. And I'll never forget the line. Zonker stands up and he looks at BD and says, you know, you are on a heavy power trip. I am having a hard time digging, man. I was just, oh, that was just the 60s encapsulated in a moment. It was brilliant, you know. I love that strip. I love the early stuff. That the early stuff to me is the funniest stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Spirit. Yeah.
And I think the issues were like heavy enough to carry that, you know?
Oh, shoot. Yeah. You know, you were, I mean, obviously you're dealing with the '70s and you're dealing with the Vietnam War and all of that. And, you know, the counterculture, and certainly when Doonesbury started and, as it progressed, you know, it didn't get any easier, you know, the world didn't become any easier, as it progressed, you know, the era of Reagan and then, everything that followed afterwards. Right. Yeah. But that's kind of cool that you make that connection, because I can see a little Trudeau now that you mention it, and, especially early Trudeau. That's my favorite stuff too. You know, the way he drew Zonker back then was just...
It was great, wasn't it?
It's great. It really was great. And Schultz had his problems with Trudeau, I think. You know, when he talks about great cartoonists, he always seems to quite consciously skip over Trudeau. And then he goes right to Lynn Johnston, you know, when he's talking about that period. I think he had a problem with the way Trudeau took time off from the job. to do other things, you know, that kind of rubbed Charles Schultz the wrong way.
I could see that.
Tell me about your writing process. What's it like for you to sit down and work on a group of strips?
You know, it always starts with how, you know, I'm feeling that day. It's weird how that, you know, flows onto the comics page. You know, if I'm in a good mood, I usually write, you know, comics about being in a good mood. If I'm in like a, you know, a funky mood, I usually write about being in a funky mood. If I'm in a bad mood, it usually, like, you know, it takes advantage of Spud a little bit.
Man, I've yet to come across Will Henry in a bad mood though, right? The comics never read like, you know, they read the personality types of the characters, but they never read like, you know, the author, Will Henry, is kind of funky today.
Well, I'm usually in a good mood. That's the thing.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I guess you got a lot to be happy about, man. And you got a good life going for you.
I like to think so, too. You know, I get to draw comics every day. That's pretty cool.
Hey, there's nothing. That's a dream, right? That's the dream come true. And then you got a son, and you got a wonderful marriage, and you're building a bakery. So things are good.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So sometimes Schultz would go to the office, and he was pretty regular, 9 to 4 or 9 to 5. And he'd sit down to write. And I remember hearing stories where he'd like throw his yellow pad. I guess he wrote on a yellow legal pad and his ideas. And I guess sometimes he'd go there for a whole day and nothing would come out. And he'd like throw the pad on the desk and go back feeling disgruntled and saying, you know, why did I bother going to work today? And then another day would come up and he'd go in and he'd sit down to write. And everything would flow and he'd write like, you know, 6 strips in a row with no problem. It's just like, you know, the ideas were flowing that day. Do you encounter those kinds of episodes?
Oh, sure. And they are the most frustrating thing you can imagine. Imagine taking a, you know, a day and saying, I'm going to take this day. You know, you got the babysitter, you got the time, and you sit down and you try to write and nothing comes to you. And you just think, what am I doing here? Why am I sitting at this table still trying to think of ideas and nothing is coming? And on the flip side, like you mentioned, you could sit down on the table and you know, crank out 30 fantastic ideas in a couple hours, because it's funny when the juices are flowing, It's easy to write, but when they're not, it's almost impossible. It's such a frustrating experience.
Well, and does it happen a lot to you, or is it an infrequent occurrence?
It's infrequent at the moment to get stumped to say. I try to write all my comics. I try to do a month at a time. So I try to write 30 comics.
Wow. You know,
in a spell. I'm not saying in a day, but I try to get in that mindset where, you know, if I'm going to write, I'm going to write a month's worth, and I'm not going to do any inking or coloring until those comics are written.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's a way of forcing myself to have to write and to, you know, force myself to come up with ideas, but that's how I work. And I enjoy it because, you know, once you get that flow moving, it does get easier to write. And once you get those first five or six comics, you know, the boulder does move a little bit.
Wow. I think I'm gonna follow that model there and see if it works for me. Usually when I sit down to write, I've got three or four ideas, and I feel pretty good when I've written six. But I've never tried to write like 30 strips in a row. That's like wow, man. That's a long game. That's a more than a 9-inning game there.
Oof. Well, the nice thing about you know, when I do 30 in a row, or you know, a month's worth, you know, a lot of times I'll do these storylines for Wallace the Brave that, you know, might encompass 2 weeks or a week, and it is a little bit easier to you know, sort it out if you're doing it all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sure. One kind of flows into the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One of the things I used to do, and I frequently still do, is I would tape record. I'd like just start speaking, you know, stream of consciousness stuff, and tape record it and then go back and transcribe it. And that worked pretty well for me. But what do you do? You sit down with a legal pad like Schultz did, or do you type it into your word processor, or what happens there?
So usually I have, you know, the Bristol board cut out to size.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really bizarre. I'll have the month's worth that I want to do stacked in front of me. And on the back, I'll just like scribble the idea out a little bit. And then I'll kind of, you know, on the back of that comic. So if you ever see one of my originals, there's just a bunch of weird notes on the back of them. And then I'll flip it over and sort of put the words in and then figure out the layout of the characters of the setting. But yeah, it's usually just you know, kind of a stream of ideas in the back of the original, and I'll polish it there and then flip it over and do the rough.
Do you do the, like, as soon as you've written the outline of the idea, do you set out to do the preliminary sketches right then and there, or do you just move on to the next idea?
I move on to the next. I get the nugget of an idea on the back and kind of like hash it out a little bit, and then I move on to the next one, because that's sort of the hardest part, is getting that nugget of an idea, you know,
yeah,
the punchline that you want to get to, or the, you know, the character development you want to get to. And then, you know, it's just like putting together the puzzle. Like you have or it's like Jeopardy, where you have the answer. You got to come up with a question to get there.
Oh yeah, sure. I'm kind of familiar with the that kind of approach to the process. When you write something, do you ever find you're writing something that's wrong for the character?
Oh yeah, a lot of times, you know,
you get a funny punchline, and you can't use it.
You know, I haven't never gone without using it, but I have. You know, it does change a lot from the back scribbles to the rough.
Uh-huh.
You know, it'll be the idea of the joke, and then I might have to switch the characters around, or like switch how you get there, or even I mean sometimes it takes drastic changes, but the idea of that nugget was still there. But yeah, a lot of times characters switch around for the joke, obviously, because mm-hmm. it's a character driven strip,
right?
But it's just getting that initial idea is the toughest part. It's all about jumbling the characters together and the pieces.
Now, do the jokes or the ideas, do they come from thinking about the situation that the characters are in, or do they come out of drawings that you've done? I know Schultz would, like, if he got stuck, he would kickstart some of his ideas just by doing funny drawings. Because one of the things he always said was, never forget that cartooning is really at its heart just funny drawing.
And I get that, and I agree with it, because, yeah, I mean, There's something kind of nice about a simple, funny drawing, and you can build a lot off of that. I know I do, and it's I don't know, it's a way to get the mojo flowing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do a lot of, like, Spud doing stupid things, or, like, Wallace with animals. That always helps to, you know, get some ideas in the bank. I'm trying to think what else I do. You know, drawings, a lot of times I'll just go outside and walk around. I don't know why, but that seems to clear the mind.
Sure, sure, absolutely. Well, yeah, I know what you mean. I have a big field out behind me that I walk my dogs twice a day, usually when I'm home, and that really helps.
I have a big poster in my studio where I have, like, all the characters listed, and then under them, like, almost like a grid, I have, like, all their interests and all their,
really,
you know, maybe ongoing jokes and things that, like, you know, you can look at them, and I find that, you know, when you're thinking about a certain situation or a certain scenario, it helps to kind of focus in a joke instead of, like, thinking about everything in the world. You can say, like, I want to do a joke about, you know, Wallace and being outside, you know, mm-hmm. and then you can kind of go from there. I want to do a wall or Spud liking pizza, or, you know, Amelia picking on Spud.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of helps. You know.
Well, as you're saying that, I'm wondering then, where do the ideas come from? Are they focused in memory? Are they, you know, again, one of the things I think of with all the things I've read about Charles Schulz is that, you know, for example, a lot of his, you know, the unrequited love that Charlie Brown felt for the little redhead girl,
yeah.
that's really based in his life. That's autobiographical. And there's a lot of frustrations that he felt as a kid growing up, whether they had to do with playing hockey and, you know, sports or his competitiveness. But there was a lot of frustrations from his life that come out in the strip. So I'm wondering, your ideas, are they rooted in your childhood experience? Because there is such a direct connection in the characters to childhood. I mean, the experiences of these kids and their responses to these experiences, to me so far, Reed is authentically childlike.
Oh, I mean, I hope so, but I draw a lot from my childhood and my upbringing. You know, I had a great childhood. There's no doubt about it. And I have some great memories from that time. And uh-huh. I feel like that has influenced the way I write. I mean, I'm sure the way Charles Schulz had that experience, you know, what did he used to say about, like, you know, if he's feeling good, he would draw Snoopy dancing or something
like
that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. So where did you grow up? I'm just curious. Was it in Rhode Island?
Yeah, Matunuck, Rhode Island.
Okay. So do you live close by to where you grew up?
I do. Yeah. I live, I don't know, maybe like 30 miles away.
Okay. Yeah. I'm actually in a similar situation, although I've lived in several different places, but
sure.
Always yeah. Kind of come back home.
Me too.
And I know you went to the University of Connecticut, and then you came back home. So home has a strong pull for you.
Yeah, I love it. But I think I love the ocean is what it is. The ocean has always been, it's always had a strong influence on my life. And I think that comes through on the strip, because the strip is very, you know, ocean-oriented, and the fisherman father.
Yeah.
But all those things tie into, I think, what I had was a good experience as a child. And I think, you know, I'm trying to bring that into the strip.
Well, it comes across, you know, I don't know if it comes across for a child reading the strip. I know for me reading the strip as an adult, I look at it and it makes me think, wow, Will had a really wonderful childhood. And the connection to the ocean is very vivid, you know, in the strip. And I meant to ask you, you know, was your father a fisherman?
He was not.
He was not.
He was a metal caster.
Wow. Okay. So that's where the sculpture came from.
You know, yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah, but you knew fishermen. I mean, fishing life was all around you, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah,
did your dad? Huh? Yeah, sure, obviously. Yeah, the ocean is still there, and people are still fishing. Did your dad ever take you out on the roof of the house the way Wallace's dad does?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's... Yeah, my father is. He's a great guy. You know, he would... I remember, like, every summer he would take our shoes and staple them to the side of the beach house and say, you're not going to need these for 3 months. Well, like, all right.
Yeah. Well, he encouraged you to revel in the ocean in the summer sun.
But, you know, like Peanuts, you know, we had our gang of kids that roamed the streets like, you know, a pack of wolves, you know, 20 uh-huh. kids deep, you know, doing whatever they wanted.
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, Lord of the Flies.
Wow. Yeah. Those are great days. Well, they certainly read, you know, Wallace certainly reads that way. And it does really read authentically as a childhood experience. So that's coming across. It really is. So very cool. So I'm curious, you know, so you've got your original stack there, you got ideas written on the back, and you're still holding on to it. You're working on Bristol Board and you're using pen and ink. You're not using iPad and iPad Pro and Procreate.
Yeah, I'm a 33-year-old dinosaur.
An old school man. All right, that's cool though. It's great. Have you tried working digitally, or is it just you're not interested? This is good enough for you.
Yeah, I guess I've tried. I don't know. I half-heartedly tried.
Uh huh. Yeah, know, you do the coloring in Photoshop for print most of the time.
I do.
You do that. So you're not a complete dinosaur.
Not a complete. Thank God.
Yeah. Right. But when it comes to the originals, well, it's nice though, you know, I mean, that reads too, that kind of hand quality comes across in the strip.
You know, nowadays I feel like, I don't know. I've always been in the school of thought where, you know, you got to learn the traditional ways before you move on to the new age ways. You know, I feel like you can take a lot of shortcuts digitally that I don't like to take, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they don't have to, but you know, an inexperienced person can, and I think it can hinder them a little bit.
Well, I agree, you know, and I actually I'm teaching a comics course and a comics art course this semester at school, and my students are all working old school, and I really, while I've worked with a couple of them in other situations where I encourage them to work with iPad and Procreate because it's such a wonderful tool. On the other hand, I don't think you have a full understanding of what all the brush points in Procreate are all about unless you've started working with brush and ink on Bristol Board and gone through, you know, the developing a feeling, you know, for brush on board and how, you know, it moves across the board, how pen and ink move together. You know, there's something also. I find that working old school traditionally makes the process slow down, and that's
I agree. I find that if I worked digitally, I would spend too much time, you know, fixing that not perfect line, you know, changing that not perfect perspective.
Absolutely.
I think when it's, you know, old school pen and ink and you just let it be, I don't know. For me, I feel like my work has a little more life to it than doing it on digitally, because if I did it digitally, I would nitpick it till it was too shiny and too perfect.
I know exactly what you mean, because I've gone through that process. But what, you know, you make a decision when you're working on paper, and that's the decision, you know, and you live with it and you live with the consequences of it, and that brings a certain freshness and vitality to it that you can kill really digitally by, you know, deleting layer after layer until you get the right line.
And you know, don't get me wrong. There's some fantastic digital work out there. I don't want to discount it, but I don't know how to do it, so I'm not going to.
Well, yeah, and you don't have to. You know, to each his own, right? I mean, that's
exactly.
Down to each his own. Some people are really fluent in it, and you would never stop them from working as well as they are working in that medium, in that mode. But then, you know, somebody like yourself, hey man, this is right for you. So, you know, that's great. Keep at it, you know, do what's working. So, you know, what's next for Wallace? You just keep growing the strip and keep getting newspapers to sign up, I hope. Like, we have a couple newspapers within the radius, you know, the 60-mile radius that here in upstate New York. And the paper that I read Wallace in is coming out of Scranton. And what's great about this newspaper, it's locally owned. It's not a chain. And so there's no US Today stuff in it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then my local paper, which used to be a great paper many, many years ago, unfortunately is owned by Gannett now. They had, but they have a great comics page. They have two pages of comics, and
no kidding.
Yeah, and they give the daily comics a nice amount of space. I have to say that it's really great. And Wallace isn't in it yet, but I'm hoping to see that they'll pick it up. They haven't picked up anything new. They haven't picked up Phoebe and her Unicorn. There's another couple of new strips out there. Daddy Days.
Daddy Days.
Yeah, they haven't picked that up either. So, you know, they've been kind of rigid about picking up strips, but maybe I'll write them a letter, you know.
Yeah, send them, you know, give them a little nudge.
I'll give them a little nudge because I'd love to see him pick up Wallace, because that would be a move in the right direction. Yeah. It keeps the comics healthy.
Make a note. He's got a new baby. His wife's trying to start a bakery.
There you go.
Yeah, like, throw this guy a bone.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, you know, she'll start off with seven papers, man. Seven papers. And what was it? By the mid 50s, I think he got it up to 300, which was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, enough to make a living on. But it wasn't, it didn't, you know, go universal. It didn't explode till the 60s. But, you know, that's amazing when you think about it. I mean,
I know. I mean, to think it started in seven papers and ended up in what, 2,600 by the end of the run?
Yeah,
I mean,
2,000 some papers. Yeah, amazing. Damn. Amazing. And that's a hard one to do, because it's hard to find 2,000 papers these days, right?
Yeah.
I love the convenience of digital comics. I love being able to go to Go Comics website and check all the comics out, and King Features, Comics Kingdom. I love going to those sites and reading my comics. But, man, I still love, you know, the book, and I still love the paper. And there's really nothing quite like picking up the newspaper and seeing that those comics pages, you know. The Sunday comics pages used to be, especially even around here when I was a kid, I live not too far from where I grew up. And the local paper had a great comic section, probably about 8 pages at least, maybe more.
Oh.
And nowadays, it's just like 2. You know, 2 pages. Are there any newspapers that are just publishing Wallace's Sunday pages, do you know? Or is it a package deal? You got to do both.
That I don't know. That I don't know. I know there's a couple that only do the dailies.
Yeah. Oh, they don't do the Sunday.
Yeah, I think the Sundays are like the cherry on top, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I think it's dailies first.
Yeah. Do you enjoy doing the Sundays?
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, it's restrictive in terms of panel sizes. There's a kind of rigidity about it, but are you allowed to play with that? I know some cartoonists have a lot of leeway with that space, whereas others hold to it pretty tightly.
Yeah, this, you know, there were I think there were like 3 choices you could have, you know, produced the Sunday in. And one of them was, you know, specified boxes that the newspapers could kind of switch around.
Yep.
And then there was like 2 of those kind of options where they had to fit these certain boxes that so they could be jumbled. And then there was one where it was just one big box and you could do whatever you wanted in there. And obviously I picked that option because it seemed, you know, the most free.
Yeah. For somebody who's got the graphic skills that you've got. Yeah. You want to be able to play with that. The way Watterson played with that. After a while, there were complaints and he said, forget it. If I'm doing this my way, or you're not carrying the Sunday strip. You know, and they went with him, you know, gave him the space, because not too many people draw like Bill Watterson. But that's cool. That's great. I'm glad that you've worked it out that way, that you've got that freedom to do that. Because if you're going to reinvigorate the Sunday comics page, I think it's got to start with that kind of freedom, that kind of flexibility to grow it, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of strips don't take advantage of. But since Watterson, I think more cartoonists are interested. I mean, Mutz does a wonderful job.
Right? Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I just love what he does with Sunday pages. It's just, and he's one of those guys who makes references to art and to art history and to comics history. And I'm sure that a lot of people aren't even aware of the references in there, but boy, they are beautiful. And I'm a big admirer of that strip and what he does in a Sunday page in particular. You know, Schultz never plays with. Now, I love reading Schultz's Sunday stuff. I've got the Sunday collections too, which are distinct from the collections of the daily stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that he sat down and he worked out Sunday strips together, one after another. Like he might work on Sundays and do 3 Sundays or 6 Sundays or something like that. And there's a thematic unity to some of them. And there's something different and distinct about reading those Sundays without the dailies in between. I actually enjoy the Sundays separated. And the color is really nice, even though I know he was picking out the colors, but I know he wasn't really thinking the way, say, you think or about color, because I know that you're thinking about color when I look at Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't thinking about it in that way, I don't think. I think it was a secondary element for him. But forgive me if I misspeak, Charles, wherever you are, Sparky. It's one of those things where he pretty much holds to the grid, allowing editors to play around with the strip. He didn't really have that freedom. Maybe he would have used it if he'd been a cartoonist who came along later, but then he wouldn't have been Charles Schulz. So when you do Sundays then, do you do them six dailies and then you do a Sunday, or do you do Sundays all in a group?
I clump them. Yeah, I'll do the dailies first and then I'll do the Sundays after.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the, so I have, you know, in theory, more time to do the Sundays, you know, it hasn't really worked out that way.
Oh, okay. So like you'll do like three Sundays together or.
Yeah, exactly. I find when you're in that mindset, like I think you mentioned with Schulz, you know, looking at the Sundays, you know, he was doing four boxes for the dailies all the time. And I think when he moved to the Sundays, he was, you know, you have to change that mindset up a little bit, you know, from space to space.
Oh, yeah. You're telling a longer story.
You're telling a longer story. And if you're in the mindset of a short story, it's tough to, you know, flip flop back and forth.
Yeah. To make that change.
At least for me.
Yeah, and I understand that. You know, you get into a groove, and I think working with three, four panels on a daily basis, it's like being on a treadmill in a way, but it's like a mode of thinking, you know, of getting into that that kind of meditation is the only word I can think of. And then trying to do a Sunday, well, now you've got a little more freedom. It's not the same way of thinking. It's a different, highly distinct way of thinking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of Schulz's Sundays, I mean, they were, what, like 7 or 8 panels always?
Yeah, something like that. Well, sometimes even 12.
Or 12. Or
12
like
panels,
that.
Yep.
A lot of the baseball ones were a lot of but they're all boxed, you know, they're perfectly boxed to be jumbled.
Yep. He used a lot of those for Snoopy, you know, for Snoopy and Woodstock. A lot of Snoopy and Woodstock in those later Sunday panels. Well, I think, you know, Will, I think we've covered some territory here in the last.
Yeah, man, that was awesome. It was fun.
Yeah. I can't believe it's been an hour and a half already.
All right.
Yeah, amazing, right?
It's very groovy.
Yeah, very groovy indeed. It's been a pleasure. And I hope we have the chance to do it again and to meet in person sometime. You know, I don't get to Rhode Island too often, but maybe do you do comic conventions still, or are you too busy doing the strip to do that?
I used to, but I haven't done one in a while. I think I might do Rhode Island Comic Con fall.
Very cool. Well, I'm sure you'll have a lot of fans lined up to meet you and get your autograph on your book. And I'm sure, you know, I hope the book has done well, because it's a terrific book and really enjoyable read. It reminds me, you know, takes me back to those Peanuts books, the Fawcett Peanuts books of the 50s, even though those were without color. It's a really beautiful book, and I think you should be really proud of it. And
I am proud of it.
Well, I hope people will go to Amazon, or go to their local bookstore and their local independent bookstore. And if Wallace the Brave isn't there, order Wallace the Brave.
Light the place on fire. No, don't do that.
we want to support our local bookstores more than ever. And get Wallace the Brave on the shelves, because it's if you love comics, I'm talking to the audience now, if you love comics, if you love classic comic strips, if you love kid strips, you're going to love Wallace the Brave. Go out, order the book, write your newspaper, call them up, get them to carry the strip, because it's terrific stuff. And Will, it's been a pleasure, and continued success, and congratulations on the bakery and on the baby, and you know, all the best. And,
hey, thanks, man. This has been a blast, and thank you for having me on. It's always fun to talk comics with people that are actually interested in comics.
Yeah, right. They seem to be. You know, you try to go out into the world and talk to people on the subway or on the street about comics, and somehow it doesn't seem to resonate. They kind of give you funny looks. Hey, you want to talk about comics? It doesn't work too well. But talking to other cartoonists really is a joy. So anyway, man, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time, and you know, best wishes for the remainder of, for a long life for Wallace. That's, I hope it runs for years and years and years.
Well, thank you. I'm going to take that.
All right, man.
Breaking news. Will Henry has been nominated for a Reuben Award by the National Cartoonist Society. Wallace the Brave has been nominated for Best Syndicated Newspaper Comic Strip. Well-deserved, Will. Congratulations. I had the opportunity to give Will a call just to get his reaction to all of this, so I'm going to play that for you right now.
Congratulations. Word has just come in that you've gotten a nomination for a Reuben Award.
Woo!
Yeah, woohoo!
I'm feeling great about it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. So the award, the nomination is for what exactly?
I believe it is for news 2018 newspaper comic strip.
Fantastic.
That's the category.
That's incredible, man. You are in a line with a great cast of cartoonists. You know, it's a pantheon that you've joined that is pretty rich and pretty. You should feel pretty good about it.
Oh, I feel great. I mean, it's an excuse to go to LA and you know, get a tux, and B,
wow.
You know,
is that where the award ceremony is going to be, in Los Angeles?
I think it is. I think it's Huntington Beach this year.
Huh? Okay. And when is it?
Hold on. I know this. I think it's the weekend before Memorial Day.
Okay.
Is that the 18th or 19th?
Okay. You got me.
I'm
calendar ignorant. So when do you find out for sure? Do you find out that night? Do they have, is it like the Oscars? You don't find out until that night, or do they announce the winners beforehand?
You know what, Jeff? I have no idea, man. This is a first for me. I couldn't tell you.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with it. And
thanks.
Congratulations. It's well-deserved. And, you know, as they say, just being nominated is award enough. And it really is when you think about the great cartoonists that you might be competing with. But I wish you all the best with that. I hope it works out for Wallace the Brave, because you deserve it. And it's a breath of fresh air on the newspaper comics page.
Well, thanks, Jeff. That's very nice of you to say.
So once again, congrats to Will. And if that doesn't convince you to give your newspaper a call, I don't know what will. But nevertheless, terrific. It's great to see a young cartoonist like Will breaking big into the business, and also to see his contribution acknowledged. I think it's important to acknowledge the contributions of new cartoonists on the cartoonist page. Well, that'll do it for me this time. Check out my website, jeffgrogan.com, jeffgrogan.com. See what I've got laying around there. While you're at it, also go over to Kickstarter. I've actually got a Kickstarter. Yes, I do. Believe it or not, I'm moving into the 21st century and picking up on that entrepreneurial spirit and trying to get my work out there to the public via Kickstarter. A lot of great stuff on Kickstarter. I'm working on a piece called Plastic Baby Heads from Outer Space, a 265-page full-color trade paperback, a magnum opus covering the first story arc of Plastic Baby Heads. Originally called The Cave of Forgotten Comedians, also known as The Queen of the Cave of Forgotten Comedians Plus. It's going to be chock-a-block full of cartoons, of stories, and interesting little fill-ins, extra pages here and there. So I hope you're going to look for it. Check out the Kickstarter page. I think you'll find it a lot of fun, and I hope that you'll consider contributing. It would really mean a lot. That's Kickstarter.com, and search for Plastic Baby Heads. So next time, I think we'll continue the discussions about cartoonists in the 21st century and the influence, the ongoing influence of Charles Schulz and his work. It means a lot to cartoonists, whether they're working for the newspapers or whether they're working on the web. And that discussion about changes in the environment, changes on the playing field of cartoonists and cartooning, that conversation will continue as we move forward. I've got a couple of interesting guests lined up, one right after another. I'm really excited about it. I think that both of them will bring something interesting to bear in this ongoing discussion and celebration of Charles Schulz and all things cartooning. So be sure to check back or subscribe. Go to Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating. And that's the best way for people to find us. So please do that. Share the podcast with your friends and those interested in cartooning. It really helps. Get the word out there. I think it'll also interest more cartoonists in coming on, and that's what I'm hoping to do. I want to continue these conversations. I'm having a blast. I hope you're having a blast too. Check back with us soon. And in the meantime, you know, give that puppy a hug, fly a kite, throw that baseball around, right? Baseball season's beginning, so get on that pitcher's mound, see if you can win a few games, and thanks for listening.